85th Psalm. Psalm 85. We do not know the author nor the precise background of the psalm, though it does appear from verses 1 through 3 that it was written just after the Lord had brought the people out of Babylonian captivity. The psalm can be divided into three simple thoughts. Verses 1 through 3, there is thanksgiving for God's deliverance. Verses 4 through 7, there is a prayer for further and a more complete restoration. And then in verses 8 through 13, you have the joyful anticipation of God granting such. The psalm begins with the psalmist looking back where they had been as a people. Looks back on the gracious, merciful intervention of God in rescuing them. In verses 1 through 3, the psalmist reflecting on the past, upon what the Lord had done for them, he realizes that the blessings of God have been abundantly bestowed upon them. Twice in verse 1, twice in verse 2, twice in verse 3, we read the words, "Thou hast." So you have six distinct references to what God had done in their lives. Again, he is recalling the past interventions of God in their lives and how that God reversed the course of the past. And it's always good for us to look back prior to salvation, at where we were, where we were heading, before God intervened. It's always good to do that. And that's what the psalmist is doing here. You notice in verses 2 and 3, he recalls the blessedness of forgiven iniquity, covered sin. Then in he goes on and he mentions God taking away and turning away from his wrath and the fierceness of his anger that we so deserved. Again, we need to think upon those things. God has been so good to us and we are blessed beyond measure. But after contemplating the blessings and the goodness of God toward them, that they as a favored people, that they were a favored people of God, and the blessed recipients of God's grace and goodness and mercy, he comes to a painful realization that they were not where they should be with God. This is very obvious from the language that is used in verses 4 through 7. From verse 4, we gather that their lives were moving in the wrong direction. That is seen in his prayer, "Turn us. Turn us." So they were going in the wrong direction. Blessed of God, but going in the wrong direction. Verses 4 and 5, it appears that they had things in their lives that were disapproved by God. And that is indicated by the mention of God's anger. And in verse 6, though they had been so blessed of God, we gather that they still lacked joy. And in verse 7, though they had been delivered, they still had some bondage in their lives, indicated by the prayer, "Grant us thy salvation," or "Grant us thy deliverance." So here was a people, blessed of God, and yet they were not where they should be, and they were not where they could be with the Lord. Realizing this, the psalmist begins to pray. And that's what this psalm is. It's a prayer. We want to take the thought today from a familiar verse in the psalm, and it is a part of his prayer, and I believe it's the central part of his prayer. Everything else in the prayer centers upon this. Psalm 85, verse 6. He makes this request in the form of a question. Wilt thou not revive us again, that, or so, thy people may rejoice in thee? Again, I believe this is the central part of the psalm. The theme of his prayer is revive us. Revive us. Notice it is revive us again. So it is something that they had experienced in the past. Revive us again. Revive us. So it is a personal experience. You cannot be revived without the personal experience of reviving. Cannot be done. Cannot happen. So it is, revive us again. So what we have here is a reoccurring personal experience with God. Our subject this morning is the personal experience of revival from God. Revive us again. That is a plea for God to act upon them in a particular way. It is a plea for God to do something to them. It is a plea for God to produce an effect in them. It is a plea for God to send a miracle upon them. The plea has its basis in the fact that God has blessed them in the past. And the psalmist knows that God is the one who can bless them in the future. God has fixed what's wrong in the past. And God can fix what's wrong now, and God can fix what's wrong in the future. Revive us again, is the prayer. So what the psalmist prayed and pleaded for, and what he is seeking in this psalm, is what we ought to always be praying, pleading, and seeking for. A personal experience of a God-manufactured, God-sent reviving. That's the prayer. And throughout this 85th Psalm, we learn many things about revival. It's not our intent to look at the entire psalm, but you learn many things about revival in this psalm. But the first thing we want to notice is there is such a thing as revival. There is such a thing. Revive us. He is praying for something very specific. Revive. That's the specific thing he's praying for. Revive. Revive us. He's praying for personal reviving. Personal reviving. The word revive is made up of two parts. You have re, meaning anew or again, and you have vive, meaning to live. So the word revive means to live anew or to live again. Really, what the word means is re-life, new life, life again. And the psalmist says, revive us, give us new life, give us life again, revive us. There is such a thing. The word revive conveys the idea of a restoring, a bringing back. He is praying, restore us, bring us back. It means to return, to recover, to raise, to awaken, to arouse, to stir, to invigorate, to rekindle, to refresh, to renovate, to replenish, and to stimulate. Revive us. He is praying for something that is very definite, something that is genuine, something that is visible, something that is personal, and therefore it is something that can be confirmed. Revival is real. It's real. The psalmist praying, revive us. He is pleading with God to stop, to reverse, wrong direction. Lord, if we're going in the wrong direction, stop us now. Revive us. And there is such a thing as a God intervening in a life and reversing a wrong direction. I thank God for every time He's come into my life and reversed my course. That's part of reviving. To revive is to stir. It is to disturb the quiet of. It is to arouse, to waken, to incite, and to invigorate to activity. Revive us. It is really a spiritual resurrection. It is a spiritual resurrection. And there is such a thing. There is such a thing as a spiritual resurrection. A spiritual revival involves an influential visit from God to the individual. And it also involves an outpouring of God upon the individual or upon a people. So in revival, God does a fresh work in His people. And be sure of this, there is such a thing. There is such a thing as spiritual revival. It does exist. And it is a real matter. And as you read through the 85th Psalm, we see some characteristics of this revival. There is a turning. Verse 4, turn us, O God. It also includes the bringing about of a improved relationship with God. Verse 4 again, he says, cause thine anger toward us to cease. That's an improvement in relationship. It includes an enabling power, verse 6. Revive us again that, in order that we can rejoice again. In revival, there is an open display of God's mercy. Verse 7, he says, show, or display, or manifest us thy mercy. Revival involves a deliverance, verse 7. Grant us, that's grace, thy salvation. And then reading on in the psalm, we see that revival involves a manifestation of God's glory. It involves the blessings of God in leading to fruitfulness. And it involves a conformity to God. The psalm ends, set us in the way of His steps. That's a revival. So from all of this, we see that a real and true revival from God involves an inner disturbance of the soul. And it involves man relinquishing control of his life, or I should say the control he thinks he has. You have no control. And just letting go. A real and true revival will always involve a confronting of sin. Always. Revival never bypasses personal sin. There is always the Holy Spirit in a revival, and He pricks and smites the heart concerning personal sin. In all true revival, God's people are brought face to face with their own sins and face to face with the characteristics of those sins. And as a result, people are brought low. All the excuses and all the justifications are gone. People are convicted. People are burdened. People are brokenhearted. People are sorrowful and ashamed over their sin. And it involves an utter hatred of sin. I'm talking about our own sin, not your neighbor's sin. It involves a forsaking of sin, a fleeing from sin, and a victory over sin. And this is what the psalmist is praying for when he says, revive us again. A real and true revival also involves a change of heart. Hearts are warmed. Hearts are made tender. Hearts are humbled. And being humbled, they're made responsive and submissive and passionate. Hearts are now focused upon God. Hearts are now absorbed with God. Hearts are brought to acknowledge the Lord. And hearts are filled with thankfulness and the peace and assurance of God. In a true revival, hearts are filled with a song. And hearts are overcome with a desire and a passion for the Lord. And they long to be more identified with the Lord. Hearts are filled with the wonder of God. Hearts are caused to overflow. And this is what the psalmist is praying for. For a confronting of sin, that people would be brought face to face with their sin. And that there would be a change of heart. Where there is a change of heart, there's going to be changed lives. Revival always results in changed lives. Lives are made more holy, more consecrated, and more surrendered. In all true revival, God, the love for God is inflamed. So a God-sent, God manufactured, God produced revival will change the lives of those who are revived. It will cause men to be the husbands and fathers they ought to be. It'll cause women to be the wives and mothers that they ought to be. It will cause church members to be the church members that they ought to be. This is always so of revival. And this is what the psalmist is praying for. Revive us. And oh, that we would plead with God right now. Revive me. Me. Don't worry about the us. If enough me's get revived, it'll be us. But it has to begin with me. Revival begins with individuals. So there is such a thing as revival. Secondly, the psalmist believed that revival was a possible reality. Now, revival is more than just a word in religious circles. It's more than just a historical fact. We can read of revivals that happened in the past, but that won't do us any good. It's more than a historical fact. It is an actual and visible event. It is something that is seen, it is something that is felt, it is something that can be confirmed. There is such a thing as revival, and it is possible. And it is possible right now for each and every one of us here. Here we are in a day of worldly mindedness amongst God's people. Covetousness, prayerlessness, selfishness, idolatry, I'm talking about God's people, coldness, apathy, spiritual waywardness, pride, ingratitude, bitterness, wrath, anger, jealousy, pride, pettiness, spiritual immaturity, spiritual instability, habitual hypocrisy. You know, people say, I'm not going to church because there's hypocrites there. Oh, there's more than you think. And it's worse than you think. It's habitual hypocrisy. We live in a day of do-it-yourself religion. We live in a day of emergency religion, God's used as a fire escape. God's people are engulfed with these things. But there is such a thing as revival. And it's possible. There's not only such a thing, it's possible. At this present moment, when so many of God's people are courted and drawn by the world, when so many of God's people have had their hearts stolen by the world, by their family, and they've fallen victim to a sin-sick society, and their spiritual interest and enthusiasm and their spiritual conviction has been swallowed up by an antichrist world. And here we are when so many individuals, so many marriages, so many homes, so many churches, they are being robbed, they are being brought to ruin. But there is such a thing as revival. And not only is there such a thing, it is possible. And therefore the psalmist prays, revive us at this present moment of spiritual distractions, when the world has a death grip on the hearts of so many of God's people, and so many of God's people have more interest in the world than they do God. And they're more willing to invest in the world than they are God. And they're more invested in the world than they are in spiritual things. They have their priorities in the world rather than spiritual matters. And they're dictated by the world more than they are dictated by the spiritual. But there is such a thing as revival. And it's possible. And it's possible right now. It is a time when the lives of many of God's people are more characterized by unbelief than faith. Their lives are more marked by worry than assurance. Their lives are more marked by frustration than peace and contentment. Their lives are more characterized by discouragement and misery than they are joy. And their lives are more characterized by doubt rather than conviction. And in such a time, there is such a thing as revival. And revival is possible. And therefore, the psalmist prays. And we ought to pray. Revive us. It's a time when the things of God to many have become stale and become stagnant. And the service of the Lord has become mechanical, become empty. And it's now just a mere form and a shadow of the real thing. And they're content with that. And the ability to worship is almost extinct. There is such a thing as revival. And it's possible. We live in a day, if you're around church long enough, you pick up the language. If you're not careful, your spiritual life will just consist of spiritual platitudes. They mean nothing. It impresses other people, but it means nothing. We are in a day of spiritual platitudes. As Brother Mark said in his devotional this morning, you can say what you believe, but you need to live it. You can fill your life with religious platitudes. But is it real? Is it real? We are in a day when people are content with mere lip service. But there is such a thing as revival. And it is possible. And therefore we ought to pray, revive me. Revive me. Thirdly, the psalmist realized that God was the source of revival. Verse 4, he prays, turn us, O God. We can't turn ourselves. Turn us, O God. He's pleading from a turning from the hand of God. Verse 6, wilt thou, that's God, not revive us again? It is a revival from God. There is such a thing as revival. And it is possible. And it does happen. But when it does happen, it will always come directly from God. And it will always be the work of God. It is not the work of man. It is the work of God. Revival is the result of an outpouring of God. It is a result of an inner working, an inner stirring of God. It is the result of an inner movement and an inner exertion and an inner disturbance of God that compels the individual to follow the leadings and the promptings of God. That's a revival. Know today there is such a thing as revival. Know today that revival is possible. It's possible for me, it's possible for you, but be sure of this, revival comes from God. No man can produce revival. No man can manufacture or give birth or create revival. I get so tired of people trying to make spiritual things happen. You're not God. Only God can do that. And God doesn't need our help in doing it. All we need to do is pray that God will do His work. All the abilities of man cannot bring about revival. All the plannings of man cannot bring about revival. All the methods of man, all the calculations of man cannot bring about revival. All the messages cannot bring about revival. The personalities cannot bring about revival. There is such a thing as revival. And revival is possible. But it only comes from God. So plead right now, revive me. Revive me. Fourthly, we see that there was a felt need for revival. As you read the psalm, you see that the need for revival was very painfully obvious to the psalmist. It ought to be painfully obvious to all of us. From the very meaning of the word, restore, recover, stop in reverse, to raise, to refresh, to renew, to awaken, to stir, to incite, to invigorate. The very meaning of the word ought to tell us the need is painfully obvious. The need is painfully obvious. It's obvious because of our sinful flesh. Because of our sinful flesh, we get off track and we need reviving. And because of our natural inclinations, which are away from God, we need reviving. Every day I get up, I have natural inclinations away from God. I have spiritual inclinations toward God, but there's a part of me that has inclinations away from God, and there's a part of you. And sometimes we fall victim to those inclinations. We need to be brought back. Because of these things, we can get into a state of spiritual decline. You ever been there? State of spiritual decline? A state of spiritual coldness? State of apathy? State of distance from God? Read the Psalms. Many times the psalmist felt a distance from God. We can get in a state of detachment from the Lord. We can get in a state of spiritual emptiness and bareness. A state of spiritual disease. There's worse things than physical disease. There are spiritual diseases. And there are some sick, sick individuals spiritually. And there are some sick, sick churches. They need reviving. We can get in a state of collapse spiritually. And we can and do become spiritually weary, spiritually exhausted, spiritually lethargic in the things of God. And our minds can and do become clouded with the philosophies and the reasonings of the world. And our minds and our lives can and do become entangled in the affairs of life. And because of all of these things, every one of us, to some degree, in some area of our life, need a reviving from God. It's true of all of us. Every single one of us have areas in our lives that need to be restored. Every single one of us have spiritual things that need to be recovered. Spiritual areas in which we need to be awakened and stirred and lifted up and refreshed. Knowing the need, knowing that there is such a thing as revival, and knowing that revival is a current responsibility, a possibility, and knowing that revival comes only from God, knowing our need of such, we ought to fall on our faces before the only giver of revival and plead and beg with great fervency to God, revive me. Revive me. Lastly, the psalmist had a fervent desire for revival. It ought to be painfully obvious that we are in need of a reviving from God. But the psalmist not only realized the need of such, he wanted it. He desired it. And therefore he prayed, "Wilt thou not revive us again?" There was a passionate and burning desire for a revival from God. Now think about a revival again. The fact of a spiritual revival involves a visit from God. A personal visit from God. Do you want that? Or is that something you want to avoid? Most want to avoid any visits from God. We ought to want that. We ought to want God to visit us. A revival involves not only a visit from God, but it involves an outpouring of God. We ought to want that. We're talking about a revival that will upend lives wherever God sees fit to upend them. We ought to want that. There are areas of my life that need to be upended. There are areas in your life that need to be upended. And we ought to want them to be upended. Revival brings about personal and thorough change. I mean, do we think we've arrived? Do you think you're as good as it gets? Or can it be better? We ought to desire. Lord, change me wherever I need changing. A revival that will hurt our self-esteem. Revival hurts self-esteem. For all those who get their feelings hurt because this wasn't done or this was done, get over it. And you need to pray. God will send a revival that will upend your personal esteem. A revival that will disturb our comfort zone. When the mother eagle wants it's time for the eagles to fly, what does she do? She stirs the nest. There are a lot of nests that need to be stirred. And no one can stir the nest like God. We ought to want that. A revival that will cause us to let go. We all have plans. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with making plans for the future. When it becomes wrong is when you absolutely refuse to let go of your plans. When God says, let go, this isn't the way it's going to be. We need a revival that will change our plans, cause us to surrender to God, cause us to forsake and flee from sin. A revival that will not allow us to stay in tune with the world. A revival that will cause us to be more of a stranger to this world. A revival that will make us more identifiable with Christ. There is such a thing, and it is possible, and it comes from God. The question is not, do we need a revival? That's not the question. The question is not, does Dean Gordon need a revival? The question is, do I want a revival? That's the question. That's going to take some digging. That's going to take some personal examination. That's going to take some honesty. Do I want a personal revival in my life? That's a question that each one of us have to ask. And we have to give careful and honest examination too. Do I want a revival in my life? Wherever it is needed. Do I long and crave for revival in my own heart, in my own life? Does my heart ache for personal reviving? If so, plead with God. Revive me. Revive me. Oh, how we need and how we ought to want. A God-sent, God-manufactured, God-produced revival. One that will upset Satan. I hope and pray that every time we meet here, we upset Satan. I'm afraid many times we don't. But it ought to upset the devil. If we're doing it right, it'll upset Satan. And you know what else it'll do? It'll make those who are not serious about serving the Lord nervous and uneasy. I want the ungodly to be nervous and uneasy. I want those who are not serious about serving God to get nervous and uneasy, because that says something's happening. Oh, for a revival from God that would restore, that would strengthen our dedication, our surrender, our submission to the Lord. Revival that would restore and strengthen trust in the Lord. A revival that would restore zeal and passion and determination to be and to do what the Lord would have us to be and to do. Many people think, well, if I just change my place of living, I'll do better. No, you won't. Because wherever you go, you take yourself with you. We need to be revived where we are. Oh, for a revival that would bring a new harmony and a new fellowship with the Lord. One that would cause our cups to run over. I'm afraid there are many, there's nothing in their cup. Nothing good. Nothing spiritual. A revival that would cause us to go from here and out there with God all over us. With God all over us. Everybody can see it. May we join with the psalmist. Revive us. Revive me. Revive me. Or revive us, but start with me. That should be the prayer of every one of us. Yes, we want congregational revival. Revive us. But Lord, start with me. Start with me. And if each one would be serious and pray that, oh, what a difference it would make in our lives. Because I do believe that there is such a thing as revival. And I do believe that revival is possible. And I do believe if it's going to happen, it's going to come from God. I do not believe that there is going to be a nationwide spiritual revival. I don't believe that. I do believe that God's people can experience revival. And that ought to be our plea. Hopefully, we've all experienced it. Hopefully, we've seen it happen. I mean, you can't predict it. God gets a hold of someone, and they're revived at that very moment. That's a revival from God. And that's a wonderful thing when a whole people experience the same thing at the same moment. We haven't seen much of that. God has allowed me to see it a few times. When God gets a hold of a whole people and just people just fall on their knees and begin to pray for God to be merciful to them. We need that. And it's possible. But God has to give it. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us in verse 7.